Welcome to Frog Talk, the ACFE's monthly podcast. I'm Mandy Moody, ACFE's social media specialist. And in this episode, I speak with Tiffany Couch, CFE, CPA, and principal of Acuity Group in Washington. Tiffany recently investigated a fraud scheme involving a trusted controller at a retail store that went from bad to worse with each transaction uncovered. So you're currently working on a case involving accounting fraud at a retail store. How did you first find out about the case, and why did you decide to take it?
I first found out about the case in the spring of 2013 when the client called and indicated that they felt like they had a lapping scheme, and they thought they had over $300,000 taken from them, and they said that the police and the prosecutors had known about it for several years and had not taken the case, and they were very frustrated and wanted a forensic accountant to take a look at it.
And were you the first person that they contacted?
Early on, when the case was first uncovered, they had another forensic accountant who had been hired by the insurance company take a look at their case and basically said, you know, yes, you've had a loss here. But they were frustrated that even that person's report had not led the police or the prosecutor to move the case forward.
So why did the police and the prosecutor decide to not take it for so long?
In my opinion, it was because the client was so hung up on the accounting mess that they had that they weren't proving out the theft. So the client had an absolute accounting mess because the person who was allegedly taking the money from them was saying, okay, well, client A paid, but I'm going to take client A's money, and then I'm going to take client B's money when client B pays, and I'm going to post that to client A's account. So we had payments that had been posted to the wrong accounts. We had journal entries that had been recorded that were completely false. And that was the quote-unquote evidence that they had given to the police and the prosecutors, and quite frankly, it was very confusing.
So why was your role so important? Because you're kind of the in-between. You know, you want to find the fraud, but also make it so that it's easily understandable and a case that they can prosecute, right?
Exactly. And I think that you have a very good point there. Our job as CFEs is to make this very complicated case easily understandable. I learned this really early on in my career. Somebody said, well, you're the smartest person in the room. And I said, well, no, I'm not. There's a judge in the room. There's a jury. There are attorneys. There are all these really smart people in the room. And they said, well, no, but nobody understands accounting. Nobody understands these schemes. And your job, you're the smartest person in the room when it comes to that subject. That number one. And number two, our job is to make it so that these people easily understand it. And quite frankly, attorneys and judges and even juries, they only have very basic levels of understanding of accounting and fraud schemes, etc. So our job is to simplify it so that it's easily understandable.
How did the employers initially spot something?
Very interesting. If you read the ACFE report to the nations, it's kind of funny how many of these cases just follow right along with those statistics. But this person was the accounts receivable clerk, and this person's job was to collect the money from the stores, to post those payments to the customer accounts, prepare the money for deposit, etc. Mm-hmm. And basically was in charge of accounts receivable. My client was trying to get a bank loan or renew their line of credit, actually, and the bank had called the office manager and called her, not our fraudster, but called this other woman and said, hey, listen, I need your accounts receivable aging, which she printed and sent over. The banker took a look at this dozens of pages of accounts receivable. It's a very large company, and they have lots of accounts receivable. And he noted that, like on page 32, there was a large $300,000 balance for a cash account. So you would never have an accounts receivable for a cash account because a cash paying customer is going to come in and pay you cash at the time of service.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
that, you know, that account's always going to be zero. He called and said, what's going on? She said, I don't know. Let me figure it out. This woman went to our fraudster and said, what's going on? You're in charge of accounts receivable. And this person cried and said, I'm very sorry. I just got behind in posting my accounts. And it's just a mess, and I'll help you fix it. So really it was uncovered sort of by accident, right, when the banker was asked for the accounts receivable aging, and it was printed in the middle of the month, which was really important because she was making her journal entries at the end of the month. So when she printed the accounts receivable aging for management, those sorts of balances were hidden. So that uncovered, they literally brought in the owner's wife, the owner's mother, who had started the company, and they started pouring through the books and realizing that it was a disaster, and there appeared to be money missing, and they let her go a few days later.
They didn't believe her when she, you know, cried and said...
No, they did. They loved her. As all of my clients love the fraudster, every single one is usually the last one they think is the one perpetrating the crime against them. They believed her, and they said, well, it can't be that bad. You know, we'll get it figured out. It really can't be that bad. So at the beginning, they did believe her, but they were actually really smart. Because they took her out, they removed her out of her office. They told her to sit up front and answer phones, and they really kind of wanted to wrap their arms around what was going on first.
So they went and, you know, kind of dove into the accounts receivable, and did they find something else, or did they hire someone else to help them?
No, they did it all. That's what's so impressive about these people. They did this all themselves. And they uncovered this huge accounting mess. Their accounting, I guess you call him the controller at the time, basically put together a summary and said, here are all the journal entries she made. Here are all of the incorrect posting to accounts. It sums up to $367,000, and that's our loss.
Wow.
And that's what they turned into both the police and the insurance company.
So when you came in, mm-hmm. how did you go about, you know, gathering up the records and making them so that they were legible and, you know, easily understandable so that they could, you know, get a case together?
So I walked in the door, and they had what I can only describe as a war room. They had all of their reports labeled and stacked together. They'd put several binders together for me of all of this proof of what they considered to be a lapping scheme. And they didn't know about that term until the first forensic accountant had sort of written up his report. And I let them tell me their story because that's very important. You always want somebody to be able to tell you their story because, number one, it actually makes them feel better. But number two, you can really gain a lot of information just by them, you know, telling you everything from start to finish. And when
yeah.
they were all done, I said, I know exactly why they haven't taken this case. I said, you've basically proven to them you have a big accounting mess. That's all you've proven to them. And I said, we have to prove that money is missing. And they just looked at me with just, you know, their mouths dropped open. They looked at each other. And I said, tell me how to prove how much money came into your stores each day. And they said, oh, well, that's easy. And this company has been around since the 1970s, and I think they've kept every single report since the 1970s. So we were very lucky in that they had kept a lot of information. So they said, oh, well, we have all of these reports that show how much money came into the store, and we know how much came in with cash, how much came in with credit card, and how much came in with checks. And I said, perfect, okay. So I said, then prove to me how much money went to the bank. And I said, you know, that's going to be easy because we can get the bank deposit slip books that you have, or we can go to the bank and get your bank deposit details. So I said, we need to prove how much money came into the bank or into the stores and how much made it to the bank. And if there's a difference, then that's your missing money. I said, all of this other accounting stuff, all of these posting to the wrong accounts, that's just the mechanism to hide it. That's just the mechanism to conceal the original theft of money. That's what they started doing. They basically started putting that together. So then I said, you have to prove to me that nobody else could have taken the money. And that's the other thing we CFEs need to realize. We also have to be the defense attorney. We need to poke as many holes in our own case as possible before we hand it to anybody else. And so I said, you have to prove to me that nobody else at the store or whoever took the money to the bank took the money, that it could only be this one person. And they said, oh, well, that's very easy, and here's the procedures of what happened at the stores. You know, the guys would put the money together. They would batch it up. If there were any money missing, this fraudster, she would have had to say, hey, there's money missing, because I don't reconcile between the money that you say you collected and the money I need to post and take to the bank. So there was never any sort of notification that had occurred. Somebody else took the money to the bank. We never had any notifications from the bank saying the deposit was short. So we were able to narrow in on exactly who had the access to the cash, had the access to the accounting system, and who was likely taking the money, and it was only really this one person. And so what I did was I said, we have to prove there's money missing first, and that's the only thing we're going to show them, money coming in to the stores and how much you made it to the bank, the differences you're missing money, and we'll show them a few examples of all of this accounting mess, but that doesn't matter. What matters is you had money and it didn't make it to the bank. The other thing that was very interesting, very textbook about this case, so to speak, is she had a very, you know, interesting lifestyle. She didn't make very much money. I don't think she made more than $15 an hour, but yet she was going to get Botox. She was getting diet shots. She was getting plastic surgery. She was very much she loved to give gifts. She loved to give gifts to the people at work, very nice gifts. And so she had a lifestyle that did not fit with how much money she was making and how much money they knew her husband was making, because her husband happened to work there too in a different department.
Oh, wow. And that's what I was just going to ask you. Has she worked there a long time?
She'd worked there at least 12 years.
And how long had it been going on, did they suspect?
We went back 6, 7, 8, 9. We went back 4.5 years. But the first month's worth of losses were nearly $10,000. And I said, you know, nobody starts a fraud by stealing $10,000, you know, the first month. That's mm-hmm. never going to happen. And so we did go back, you know, a year here, a year there, and we could see that she had perfect accounts. That was the other thing. She had perfect accounts receivable for many, many years. And we went back to 2006, so I would say in 2004 or so, we saw like $300 missing, and it was recorded as a quote-unquote error. And so we believe it had started in 2004. Again, very small, a few hundred dollars here, a few hundred dollars there. But the client just chose to start in January 06 and move their case forward.
Wow.
And by the way, the loss was much greater than the $367,000 they had identified at the beginning. We identified a loss of nearly $425,000, I believe, and that's just what we know. You know, that's just this period of time. Had we gone back to 05 or into 04, those losses would have been greater. She was averaging more than $10,000 a month in losses. So it was much greater than the quote-unquote accounting mess that they had identified early on. And like I said, that's because a lot of those losses had been written off the books in years prior. Mm-hmm. So really, what was remaining on the books was basically, you know, some of these thefts that had not yet been written off.
You come in and you build the case, and obviously the police and the prosecutor take it. What happened after that?
We wrote a report. We actually had the client put everything together. Cash skimming schemes are very time consuming in in terms of proving out your case, because you have to first prove the money came in, then you have to prove what went to the bank, and you need to collect all these documents like receipts, or in this case they had lots of reports. And so I always ask my client, do you want to do that yourself and have us bless your work, or do you want us to do it? And so they chose to literally spend the summer putting their case together. They quite literally found every single report from each store for each day from 2006 through 2010. They then matched all of that up to all the bank deposit slip books. Then they created summary schedules saying, here's how much money came into the store, here's how much made it to the bank, and here's the difference. So they did all of that work over the summer. Wow. Our job was then, you know, before we can write a report, we have to prove that that number's correct. So then we basically double-checked their work and basically ticked and tied their numbers to all their documents. We made some adjustments because in some cases they were over, in some cases they were under. You just had a transposition of a number. So we basically blessed their work and tied all of these numbers out to the actual documents and then wrote a report. That report was issued on a Monday, and the fraudster was arrested on Friday. And I will be honest with you, I have never I've been doing this 7 or 8 years now, I have never seen it happen that quickly.
I was going to say, that's fast.
That's really fast. And I think one of the reasons why it was fast is once they brought me in, then I said, well, let's call the detective, let's call the prosecutor, let's get them on board early on, which is really unheard of again. But they had been sitting on this case for a long time. My client had literally called the prosecutor's office every other week for the last several years, saying, why aren't you taking my case? Why aren't you taking my case? She was very persistent, very nice lady. And so they came to several meetings over the summer. I explained to them, here's how we're going to do it. And they said, yes, that's how we want you to do it. And so I think one of the reasons why she was put into custody so quickly is, A, they were involved early on, and, B, our report was just how I described it. The money came in. Mm-hmm. The money didn't make it to the bank, and the only person that could have done it was this person. And here are some other things you need to know about this person's lifestyle and some of the things that she said. And so, you know, when you make it that easy for the police and the prosecutor, I do think that things do happen more quickly, although this was a bit of an anomaly.
So what's the most valuable lesson you've learned so far with this case?
My biggest lesson here, two things. Persistence is critical. Persistence is critical. When you know there's something wrong and you've got a gut feeling that something's wrong, you need to find that professional who can help you. But what it really identified for me is how easy it is to do what I call getting caught in the concealment. And so many clients get caught up in the accounting mess, and even the accountants, like this forensic accountant early on, just getting caught up in the accounting mess and trying to make sense of the mess instead of going, okay, how do I prove the money's missing? And so I'm trying to put some education together around that thought that, you know, how do I teach other CFEs about, this not getting tangled in the web of the concealment, but rather stepping yourself back and really figuring out the theft in the first place.
So the employee is currently in jail, correct?
The employee spent a weekend in jail and is out on her own recognizance, and we are awaiting hearings and trial dates and etc.
And do you know if she is planning to plead guilty or non-guilty, or has she responded to the allegations at all?
Yes, I went to the arraignment last week. That's the other thing. The client wants me, I'm sort of holding their hand through the process and really trying to explain to them some expectations. You know, how long does this process take? How many times will these trial dates be set aside? You know, that sort of thing. So we went to the arraignment last week, and she did plead not guilty. And a trial date has been set for December 2013. But given the amount of money that's been lost and the complications of the case, it likely will not go to trial until 2014.
So what are your hopes for the end result?
First of all, my client was thrilled that, number one, somebody like me believed them and was able to simplify it. My client was thrilled when the police took it and the prosecutor said they would move forward with the case. My client was thrilled when they got an arrest. So I'm very happy to have a happy client. It would be nice for my client and for closure purposes to see that a trial happens or that this person pleads guilty and they can move forward with that. But we've moved the ball so much further in the last few months than what has happened in the last several years. You know, I find this, even if it were all to fall apart for some reason today, to be a very successful case. But I do hope for them that they're able to at least, you know, see some justice done for themselves. I think that would be important to them.
That wraps up another episode of Fraud Talk. You can find more podcasts at acfe.com/podcast. Thanks for listening, and I will catch you next month.